Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show. Yes, it's 8 a.m. or it's 8 p.m. sorry, on a Monday. I've been working since 8 a.m. and just got home. So yes, I'm a bit knackered and a bit out of it, as you can probably tell from that intro. We've got Steve joining us, who was just saying but just before we went live, that he's been made sick by some of the comments about Super Rugby this year. So particularly by JK anyway. So we're in for a good show tonight, folks. And for those of you, don't forget you can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or X, we already call it. And you can actually join the live chat on YouTube and Facebook. Also, you can listen back on the old podcast. But how are you doing, Mr. Cornflake?
Doing well, doing good. I mean, it's only one in particular that I don't like his comments. One Aucklander that was a terrible coach that shouldn't really say much. But hey, good weekend of rugby, right? Fun, exciting, lots of points, lots of scoring. Tight finishes, red cards. I mean, we had it all. Liquid short sorts. Stick your hand in the bag and see what you can pull out. It was an exciting weekend of rugby.
On the pitch, yes. Not many people bothered to turn up and watch it off the pitch in the stands. But
that was going to be my first point of the first game. You know, despite the fact that no one showed up to watch it, it was still exciting to watch on TV. Like many people in Melbourne thought that it was also more exciting to watch on TV. But alas, it's a shame, right? It could be like... Look, what, you know, you want a big event, you need like only a few things to work, right? You need people to show up, you need the sport to be entertaining, and that's pretty much it. And you've got yourself a good event. The sport was entertaining, but no one showed up to watch. That was the problem. It was even when the Rebels played, it wasn't really that. It was a little bit better. You could tell a lot of people were there to watch the Rebels because, hey, local team. But, man, wouldn't have been good if we could have had like a – even a half full stadium for like the whole weekend, like, you know, Sevens used to be back in the glory days.
Yeah, take this magic round to Fiji. Then you'll get full grounds. That'll be fun.
Yes.
Doing it in Melbourne. Sorry, it just doesn't work. At the end of the day, yes, I understand. They're paying the money. But look, if you get the crowds, you don't have to worry about the money. All right. The money comes to you once you got the audience. Rather than having to chase the money and lose the audience. It's the wrong way around to doing it, please. There you go. Good evening, Hughes. He says, at this point in the crowd, but there is no other place in Australasia to be going to pay to host a sporting event. You're probably right, yes. But that's the problem, isn't it? Following the money, not the fans. Clearly, Fiji could not afford to pay for this round, no. But wouldn't it be great if every team on a rotation got to host Magic Round once a year? One year, like on a 12-year rotation.
Super round. What's super magic round?
Magic round, super
is
round, whatever
league?
It's called.
Oh.
The other one is on, if the other one's on NRL, probably.
Boo. Hey, why don't we go to Las Vegas? That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yes, I'm not sure that. I'll hear on Wednesday whether that works or not, but I don't think that was a very good idea.
Better crowds.
Sorry?
Better crowds.
Better crowds? Oh, good. Simon says, yeah, host it in Adelaide. Yeah, but if you're planning to put a team there, sure. But yes. It was a great round of rugby, though. I had my kids this weekend, and I was working most of the weekend as well. So I've not seen much of the rugby. I've caught up on all the highlights. And I have opinions, because, hey, who needs facts when you got an opinion for an opinion? So on that one. And as Octana writes, at least all the players played their part. Even the guys who got red cards, absolutely, they played their part too. If not for the whole game, they played their part for some of it, at least. Dear. But I guess we kicked off with what was with one of the two kind of heavyweights, I would say, of this being the two New Zealand sides, with the Highlanders playing the Blues in that opening round. And as we were just discussing, Hosking Satutu pre-show got himself a hat trick in this one, making the top try scorer in the competition with five tries at the moment, which is pretty impressive. So there's been quite a few guys scoring it pretty freely in some of these games. But so what do you make of the opening game? I mean, the Highlanders really struggling to keep pace with the Blues when you think that actually this scoreline was closed up by a try after the final whistle. So it really was kind of a comfortable win, a game that the Blues always looked kind of in the lead and in control of.
Well, not right at the start they didn't, because they got off to a horrible start. The Highlanders were on fire. Nice and early. They started off about 15 or so nil. They were on a cracker sort of start for the game. So
you're watching a different game.
How am I watching a different game?
So, yes, we open up with the Highlanders try, but
yes,
Hoskins Tutu comes back and it evens up 5-5.
Your friend Keepin scored, and the Highlanders are in control. And then Patchell scored.
In control.
It was all Highlanders. 3-1, all the way through. So it wasn't until, it wasn't 15-0, but it was what, 3-3? Come on, do the math. 3-1, and then Perifit got a penalty. So Highlanders were not cruising, but they got off to the better start, that's for sure. They were leading. They were ahead of the Blues. It wasn't until really just before halftime that the Blues kind of turned it around in that Crusaders time, as they call it, just after the halftime buzzer, and then into the second half, that the Highlanders really fell off the way. But it was that directness of the Blues that really set them apart. You know, you can tell not only by their scorers, but the way they played and forced the Highlanders to make a lot of tackles, like Nocturnal says, but they forced them to do a lot of defensive work. They forced them into playing more up the middle than they probably would have liked, because now the Highlanders, they've got all that excitement on the outside. They've got all the fast finishes, and the Blues kind of turned a bit of their own medicine of the Highlanders of the past being all about that forward play, and the Blues come and played that with themselves. So it was a bit of a turning up of the tables and the styles, but I think the Highlanders started off well. They just had a little period, a good period of crucial areas around halftime that they kind of fell asleep. Come back late, made it a bit closer than it actually was. Blues were pretty much cruising by then. But, to be called a heavyweight to start the round off, I'm taking that for a start. So, there's one win. And the development of Reece Patchell throughout the opening couple of rounds has been quite incredible. So he was phenomenal in this game against the Blues. He's a standout in a Highlanders jumper. It's good to see those players standing up and performing. The guys that we're like, oh, we could be good. We could have a good back line. Things could work for us. Actually turning into results. So I went into this not expecting a victory. The Highlanders, I think, played better than I thought. It's come through with this with what? 4 tries. The Blues going. Blues only got, what, 6 or 5? I can count. So, they didn't. Yeah. They didn't go too badly off the boil. I thought they were pretty close. They got it right to the end. One or two moments, if they kind of caught their concentration a little bit better, could have been the difference for them. But to the Blues' credit, though, when they got into the 22, especially their second half, they delivered points. I think that was really crucial. And they delivered them really quickly as well. Like you've seen them, so they get close to the tries to Satutu in the second half. He just crashed over. And it was only a few phases in, whereas the Highlanders went on attack. They took a while to break down the Blues' defense when they were in that attacking opportunity. So the Blues probably could have made a bit more on it if they, forced themselves into the issue a bit more. If they went into that next gear, I feel like the Blues still had a bit more to offer in that game. But they kind of just kept the Highlanders away, especially when they got that control and that dominance in their forward pack. But from a Highlanders perspective, I thought that was a fairly good effort for them. Oh, man, they get 5. I was looking at the wrong line. They got 5 as well. Yeah, that's right. The guy on debut, just on the field, come in, scored that try and then converted as well. That's right. That was a cracker. Good little lad. Great stuff.
The but yeah, it was. And well, Torres says again, goal kicking not great. I mean, sure, yeah, they missed three conversions, but I mean the Blues missed two conversions, right? But the Blues took 3 points with penalties where the Highlanders didn't. And that ends up being the difference at the end of the day with this. Because as you say, it's five tries each. It's just a couple of penalties, but it's that game management in that first half. The Blues might not have been getting points, but they were playing in the right areas of the pitch, like 66% possession, 64% territory, really were, and perhaps not getting the reward they should have done. But that control, as I say, of the game, clearly the try after the hooter in the first half to take the lead. Would have been dispiriting for the Highlanders, and that obviously got the and then another quick try straight after half time meant that the Blues did your typical Crusaders thing: score either side of the half, get yourself in the lead, and basically don't look back from there. Or the sort of championship minutes, all of that kind of rubbish sayings that they have. But yeah, they really did dominate those. A bit of concern for the Blues around their scrum, losing 3 out of 7 of their scrums. Another thing that we kind of heard, I think it's probably actually one of the I can't remember if it was Six Nations or Super Rugby, where we said lineouts are now the important thing. Look, the Highlanders lost 3 lineouts, the Blues perfect from their lineouts. So again, you need that platform. That platform is so important nowadays. It ties up all the forwards in one area and it gives you back space to room. Room to play out wide. So if you can get your certain moves working, it's great. I know there's some things in there about percentage tackle completion. Yep, the Highlanders tackled well and defended well throughout this. 90% tackle rate. But one of the stats that I remember reading for a couple of years ago was that tackle percentage isn't the thing that is a good guide as to who wins the games. It's the number of tackles missed rather than percentage missed. 27 missed by the Highlanders, 19 by the Blues. Those two key little stats there: number of tackles missed and lineouts. Tidy up those two, and I think you're in for a good thing. The tackles one actually is about keeping hold of the ball a bit more. Don't give the opposition so much possession. Whilst I think Patchell's been great, or has been really good with his. And has shown his kind of his offloads and his ball playing. I think the combined kicking of the or tactical kicking of the Highlanders perhaps needs a little bit of work, on though.
I found, yeah, talking about the kicking, it worked a lot, the crossfield kicks when you're in attacking zones. It worked a lot and it didn't work a lot. I love them and I hate them, right? It's that thing where it's like, if it comes off, you're like, whoa, yes, do that some more. That was brilliant. And when it doesn't come off, you're like, oh, we're just giving away the ball, a pointlessly, right? It's just one of those silly things. Keep it in hand, you know. You're near the 22. Keep hold of the ball. So that's frustrating, but it's rewarding. I think Patchell loves to do those kicks. And I think he's got danger players out wide that he can kick to that do work with his back three. So I don't mind it too much, but they did pump a lot of those down. You saw just about more of those than you did any sort of real territory kicking, as in looking for open spaces and that sort of thing from them as well. But, you know, if you're going to look at this from a Highlanders perspective, the way they come through this game, they were shut out of that first half. And it's intriguing that, you know, you say that Blues scored that try just to get that lead after extra time of the first half. They were really shut out of that game in the first 40 minutes, stat-wise, right? And it just goes to show that stats tell you one thing, but it doesn't mean, you know, you take the scoreboard out of it and say, you know, the Blues were trailing until dead on half time, yet they had over 60% of possession and territory for that first half. Just goes to show how well the Highlanders were taking their chances in that first 40 minutes. But I did find it interesting watching it full time with the post-match interviews of this game, when the Blues talked a lot about how they didn't mind if they trailed going into half time. Because their game plan, and it's very interesting to hear this from the Blues as well, who typically aren't a team that do this sort of stuff, but they had a very long-term game plan of wearing down the opposition through that style that they were playing, which surprised me, because the Blues typically, I don't consider having the brain capacity to put together a full 80-minute tactic like that. So it's nice to see, you know, from a Blues perspective, to actually being able to put that together, execute it, not get flustered by being behind, and then stick with the plan and continue to, you know, execute through and actually get the reward at the end of it, is pleasing from their regard. So they played their game plan. They knew that they were probably going to struggle to come in at first half of the lead. They did anyway. Well done to them, but it makes things easier for the second 40 minutes and gives you confidence in future that you can execute that sort of plan as well. But from a Highlands perspective, yeah, less ball, still scored tries. I'm excited by the back line they've got, the outside backs, the finishers, just trying to get that link up, right? That combination, everyone on the same page. I think that, you know, this competition, you look at it, you know, and the games you're going to look at later, we'll see some other teams you're going to talk about. We're like, I had these guys maybe not making, you know, the playoffs. And now you're looking and going, who's next? You know, these guys probably could make the playoffs. And is the Highlanders a team on the threat now of not making it? So it's a lot more intriguing to look at after just two rounds than it was, you know, a fortnight ago.
Yep. And look, not too much. Vern Cotter looks a very grim man in the box. I think he looks like a very, very grim man all the time, to be honest. But what you're talking about there about sticking with the plan shows that, or is an indication anyway, that he's got the players' buy-in, which is a great sign for the Blues. Because let's be honest, your players like Akiri Iwani, in the past, you've looked at them and gone, is he doing what the coach actually asked him to do? Because it doesn't look like it. He seems to be playing a different game. So to actually have all the players, as you say, singing from the same hymn sheet, actually believing in the coach, is a great start for Vern Clotter. Talking about that wearing the team down, again, looking at some of the player stats so far for the season, Mark Talia is second for carries, third Hosking Satutu, fifth equal Caleb Clark. So three out of the sort of top five carries in the tournament are in the Blues. It shows you again, just we're gonna keep playing and run at you. Now, I know you're not a great fan of Caleb Clark, and I think, yes, since he went off to sevens, he hasn't come back and set the world on fire. But he's a bit of kind of a power runner as far as rather than the gliding runner. Mark Talia always breaks the game line, slippery as hell. And then Hosking Satutu really starting off this season with a bang. Is he making a mark? Mark for the All Blacks. We'll have to wait and see.
Oh, look, Kate, he's playing really well, right? I mean, like I said before, close to the line, he looks like he's got that fever, right? He just looks unstoppable. The Highlanders had two, three guys on him, and he's showing amazing power. It just makes me think that having that buy-in like you talk about, but I think it's more the players seem to look like they actually understand what their game plan is now. Like, they look focused and clear-headed to say, this is what I've got to do. Whereas in the past, the Blues, like you talk about Akiri Iwani, they get a bit of that headless chicken syndrome, right? Where it's like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do. I'll just run. That's what I know what to do. I'll just do that, right? You know, it's like they just get a bit flustered and they lose sort of control of the plan because maybe it's a bit too just complex, right? And they're just trying to make too much out of a simple task and they just go back to their native way of playing. Whereas they seeing this way, that's like, okay, I know what I've got to do, whether it's the way it's coached, whether it's the game plan being more simple for them to understand or whatever it is. It just seems that they just know what their tasks are and they know how to execute it. And it's already from these opening couple of games, you can see it developing very strongly. So it's looking promising for the Blues heading into, I guess, some bigger games later on down the track where it will really get tested if they can keep that faith in their game plan.
Yep. So let's move on then to the second game. Now, look, in that game, we had over 900 metres worth of running with ball in hand. In the Rebels versus the Force, we were over 1,200 metres running ball with ball in hand. So clearly, the crowds, the people that were there and the people watching on TV, there was lots of running rugby. And so you've got to say, from the not to right, I think the Blues are scared of Cotter. I think most people are scared of Cotter. This is the guy who was a pre-World Cup training camp for Scotland, took them up a mountain and said, here's a live rabbit, it's dinner, kill it.
And Scotland's never recovered.
Scotland's never recovered since then, yes. So yes, not his finest hour. Let's be clear on that one. So yeah, Rebels versus the Force. A player that you have been excited about seeing this season was Carter Gordon. Disappointing in the first round, and it seemed like the second in that round, Andrew Callaway was doing a lot of the work. Filippo Donguna was put in the centres. You're like, why are you doing that? This round, second game in, and Dungunu's on the wing. Funny enough, suddenly picks up two tries. Andrew Callaway still in the centre of things, but Carter Gordon now actually starting to pull the strings and therefore Andrew Callaway able to play off him. And boy, oh boy, those two seem to be running the show here at the Rebels. And it was looking good with those two playing. I've got to say, whether they can do that every game, I don't know. But to me, that combination is that 10-12-15 combination is looking really good for the Rebels this year.
If that combination does look good, yeah, it's going to be huge for them. It's key players, isn't it, for that team to push on through. But they weren't without tests here in this game by any stretch of the imagination. The Western Force were up for this game massively, and they looked like they should be the team to win it as well until, you know, you'd say midway of the second half, going towards that last 15-20 minutes, they started to just fall off the pace and get completely swamped by the Rebels team. But man, that first half, there was really one man running that show for the Rebels, and that was Callaway. He's just phenomenal. He makes basic things look even easier than they really are. You know, it's just all he did is slice a line, you know, outpace a fullback, and he scored a try. And it's like, well, why can't 29 other guys do that? You know, it's like, why does he make it look so easy? But the Force were really good in the first half. I picked them to win this game, and I was at halftime. I had a cheesy grin on my face. I was like, yep, screw you guys. They don't pick the Rebels. You're going down. I got this one on tap brilliantly because they were playing really, really well. But you can tell by just the scorecard alone, the second half, very little came from this Western Force side at all, whereas the opposite kind of went the way for the Rebels, where most of their scoring came throughout that second 40 minutes. So, yeah, big game players. A lot, you know, ironically, we talked about it last week about how the commentary team put the boot in to Maunder, the number nine from up north. He didn't play, and they still put the boot into him, saying that the difference is becoming having Tuttle in there instead of Maunder, and they got fast ball, and it improved the combination between the nine and 10. And I thought, man, just, you know, kick a guy while he's down, why don't you? It was incredible. But yeah, that could have been a bit of a case, right? Carter Gordon, someone he's a bit more acclimatized to playing with, and having inside him as well made a bit of a difference. But yeah, Callaway is just an absolute freak of a man. He's nothing flash, you know? He just does the basics so incredibly, incredibly well, and he just makes it really hard to defend. He finds a space, he manipulates space well, and he finds matchups. And his core skill of just pace and acceleration just catches players completely off. Even though everyone knows it's coming, everyone knows what to expect, they still can't stop it. But for Western Force perspective, really good first half. Chase Tiatia somehow still scoring tries and still being a threat just is baffling to me because he looks like he's about 45 years old, but he's still doing the job.
And playing on the wing. I mean, he plays all over that back line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stephen Harris, great to hear from you, mate. They're saying how good would Callaway look in a good team? No respect rolls. Remember Callaway 2019? I remember interviewing him when he was playing at Turkana's Manukau. And everyone was like, why the hell have they got this foreign import in? He's not very good. Look at him now. You're like, yes, okay. Now he's kind of one of the first players you put down on the team for the Wallabies. Mm. So, yes, it's amazing how players look different in different environments. And when they actually get some continuity in an environment as well on that one.
Continuity is key, I think, for the Force. That was massive for them that first half. Like, no one really incredibly stood out for their team, but their tries were well worked just using numbers, right, and overlaps and getting players into the right areas, which is, you know, no one really ripped that game to shreds for the Force. They just had the right options and the right players and took the right choices to make as well. I thought Tiatia probably was one that stood out for me because they went to him a lot and just, you know, as a guy to try and, hey, make a line break, we'll follow you. And if you can, you know, we'll get on the end for the pass. And that's how a lot of their tries were created. So positive from them, really, really positive. And I think they aren't going to be the pushovers that many people expected. If they can mentally stay stable enough to believe that they can win games, you know, the Rebels at home in their big super weekend, I thought this was going to be a shocking game. I kind of sighed to myself before it started, going, "Oh, why am I watching this? This is going to be a shocker." And at the end of it, I was like, "Wow, did the Highlanders and the Blues play tonight? Because that one was a cracker." I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't a lot of errors. It didn't feel like it anyway. It just felt like it was just a good game of rugby. You put a different shirt on them and call them a different name, and you'd say, "Well, that's a great game."
I mean, 13 scrums for the Rebels suggests that the Force dropped it a few times.
But it's not many.
13?
Wasn't there a stage, actually, just before halftime, there was an incredible amount of restarting scrums. It was halftime had gone, as in the 40 minutes was up, and I think they reset the scrums 6 or 8 times. And that did my nut in. I was getting annoyed by that. And the referee was just a bit like, "Well, you know, lads, it's half time. You're not wasting anyone's time anymore. So why should I blow it up? You're wasting your time. You know, you're going to be 20 minutes late back home now after this one because you're pissing around at half time." Literally, half time would have been over if they'd just gone out at 40 minutes. So that was a bit of a, you know, just go to half time, please. You know, and then they scored from it anyway. So it's like, okay, maybe it was worth it.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Force, the stats here go against what I was saying earlier, because the Rebels missed it was 28 missed tackles. The Rebels, the Force, 29. It's pretty even there. But the Rebels lost 4 of their lineouts. So, okay. So, and that's that wasn't so. So, me saying you need a good platform off the lineouts didn't, so it doesn't go, doesn't work in this game, but there you go. It doesn't work in every game. But turnovers is a big one here. 16 by the Force, 8 by the Rebels, and then also your penalties conceded. 14 by the Force, only 8 by the Rebels. You're allowing people to march down the field and get easy territory if you're going to give away 14 penalties. Keeping it single figures is what they always say at international level. So well done to the Rebels. Yeah, they played disciplined rugby, used their key players well. And came away with the win. Well done to them.
I think a big part of that penalty count too was he was sleepy in the first 20-25 minutes, but Taliana Tupou woke up in the latter part of that first half, and he was a monster. He did destroy scrums massively, and he destroyed 4 scrums. So that was a big part. I don't know what the... Yeah, there you go. What are the scrums? Rebels had 10 of their 13, where the Force only had a couple. So that was a big play. He was a big part, winning their own, demolishing some of the Force. He was incredible. And so much so that they even asked him at halftime, how much longer can he go? And they're like, "Oh, we'll evaluate. We'll give him 5 minutes and we'll, you know," bullshit answer. He actually played quite a bit of time, but he actually looked like he's starting to get up to speed. Like, we talk about this every week now. Oh, can he get up to speed? Can he get back to himself? Can he stay injury-free? He was quiet in the first start, and there was a few scrums, and it's like, okay, they're just blobbling around. But then something clicked, and he went crazy. He completely destroyed a few scrums, and then he went off and had a wee break and had a wee interview. So good for him. It was good to see him. Yeah, he looked at his best, right? He was winning scrums, and he was becoming a force. And let's be honest, that scrum being good is just him. It's just him. Also, let's be honest.
Also him not having a hurt hand as well. Last week, it looked like he didn't want to be on the pitch. So great to see that he actually wants to be there and playing and not getting hurt. Because last week...
And you know what he did? He made a break. And you know what he did? He just got tackled softly after about maybe 10 metres. He hardly got tackled. He just went down like a sack of spuds. It's like, yes, Tamaiti Williams, learn from that man. I was like, there's no way that really tackled him. But yeah, I was like, he just doesn't want to run any further. He's had enough of that.
Oh, dearie me. Fantastic. All right, then. This next one is a game that perhaps you shouldn't look at the stats because the stats are all over the shop for this one. Moana Pacifica versus the Fijian Drua here in this one. 39-38, Moana Pacifica came out on top just at the end there. But again, another 1,200 metres running in this game. So some lovely running. But I think, to me, one of the big differences was how each side scored tries. On the whole, Moana is a pretty much short distance blast over with the forwards and bash it over, whereas the Andruas, quite often from pretty long way out, giving it to the guy in the number 14 jersey and say, do something. Or the guys kind of run to go, make this guy have space and give it him because he's good. And off he went. He didn't score every time, but he got the meters and then passed it on, and then the move went on to score. So boy, oh boy. And we'll do some butchering of names at this point.
Oh, here we go.
Rava to Mada, which is miles away. I'm really sorry about that one. But look.
That's pretty close.
Having seen, a massive fan just off this one game. He really did light things up for the Endura.
Rava to Mada. You're pretty close. That's pretty good. I'll give you a pass mark. It's better than Marky Mark. I mean, you say that, you just get a virtual slap through the screen almost. It's that bad. But he was electric. Phenomenal. But why do we like watching Fijian rugby? Because they just do that sort of stuff, don't they? They go bananas. They go nuts. They're exciting. They can go long range, any which way you like. It's just really fun to watch. So I enjoyed seeing a bit of the thunderous runs of Rava to Mada. I thought he was phenomenal as well. But, you know, this was a really interesting game because both sides absolutely threw everything they had at it, wasn't it? This is probably the closest to a real-life sort of derby match we've kind of got left in Super Rugby, isn't it, between the two islands teams. So it's good to see there's a lot of love, you know what the Pacific nations are like. There's a lot of love between each other. But, hey, when they're out there on the field, that's for one reason and one reason only, and that's to win over the other side. So the real grudge match was out there. We've seen some phenomenal tries, and we're starting to see players stand up again, right? Like, we see this with these sides you go into and go, oh, that guy, I know that name, I know that name, I know that guy. I haven't seen much of him. Now we're starting to see Lotu Anisi. I mean, give me his number 8 jersey every single week. That guy is phenomenal. 2 games, and he's in my team of the season already. He is just exquisite. Every single time he touches the ball, he really, really looks dangerous. Again, Rava to Mada, we know who he is. We know what he's about. But still, he brings it every single game. I thought Danny Tuala brought himself a bit more into this game as well for Moana. So it's good to see him up in the line a bit more. I think he's a very dangerous, creative player that probably is. He's not wasted at fullback, but I feel like he's the sort of guy who in the back line can cause you a lot more problems than just sitting at the back in a creative sort of, 10-12 channel sort of player. So it's good to see him getting a bit more involved. I just think, and Moana as well, with the experience of Anare at 9, helps them incredibly. I think he is a really, really key part of their team. And you just see his calmness or just his ability to just throw that ball through. The link between the forwards and the backs is very fluid. And I think he's a big, big part of that for that team as well. But incredible match, super fun, lots of points. I mean, if that doesn't get people in the crowds to go to games in Melbourne, then nothing is, let's be honest. Because, it's either that or we bring England over. And, I mean, if that happens, that's your fault, Melbourne.
And look, I'm telling you what, says William Havili is a player getting better each season. Yeah, look, here's a guy who had like maybe a handful of caps for Tasman before he got capped internationally. And then suddenly was in Super Rugby. And you're kind of like, wow, okay. Look, he hasn't had that grounding of being a starter at NPC to get the minutes in. He has had to have all his minutes in very high level rugby, and that's really been a problem for them here. Is that all his experience has been in top level rugby. He doesn't have those hours or those of rugby at a lower level that means you kind of just muscle memory as to what to do next. One of the things here is, Stephen Harris has already jumped onto the Crusaders game and about the lack of experience at 10. But we'll definitely come on to that one because. But Moana Pacifica did get a bit lucky here in this one. From memory, one of the tries was a high kick that no one claimed and bounced in their favour and things like that. So they did get a little bit lucky in this one. But look, we know they don't have a home ground, effectively. They don't have a proper training facility. They're all over the shop. They've got a brand new coach, a brand new squad, pretty much. So they need the odd bounce of the ball on this one. And someone here says, Moana Pacifica actually improved since last year. Yeah, we've seen them. Yeah, they look much more structured in the first game. against the Highlanders, if my memory is serving me right. And yes. And now to have picked up a win, this is fantastic for the morale. I'm just going to very quickly have a look who they've got next round and see whether they come. And look, they get the Rebels at home next weekend. I mean, that is, look, yes, we've been talking about the Rebels being sort of better than we expected them to be, but still, that is definitely a good winnable game for the Moana Pacifica after this one. It's a great start for them. Clearly, there are harder games to come against, like your Blues, your Crusaders, your Chiefs. But hey, great starts for them for the season. Playing some attractive rugby, but some sensible rugby as well. Let's say, if you look at who their tries are from, Mafaleo, a prop, NEC, an eight, Molly, a hooker. They are bashing over from short range. But hey, they all count, whether they've been run in from 80 metres like the Fijian and Drua were doing, or whether they are, or whether it's only takes to you, whether it's 2 metres, but you've got five guys you're sort of having to kill to get through and actually score. Hamilton, the Pacific Island city. Yes, absolutely. I mean, if we could find a city apart from Palmerston North that is further away from the sea in New Zealand, then it's pretty much it, isn't it? I mean, Palmerston North and then Hamilton are the two cities of the second most removed city from the sea. So yes, absolutely very Pacifica in that point of view. Tanner Manga, Coventry and Jones are actually working well, and it's a real mishmash of a coaching group at the end of the day, isn't it? With sort of counties, North Harbour, and then and Wales. But hey, it's working, which is great to see.
What's really interesting though, after this result, since we're halfway through the round, you look at this now, right? And you go back to 2 weeks ago, pre-round one, and we're like, well, Moana's going to finish last. And then it's going to be, down there with the Rebels and the Force. And now you're looking to go, well, the team that we thought we were going to probably, claim one of the last couple of spots would have been the Drua and the Highlanders. Well, they pushed the Highlanders right to the end. They've beaten the Drua. How does your perspective of these teams look now, looking at the teams that you expected to finish in those bottom four spots, considering what the Waratahs we'll talk about in a moment, what the Reds did, which we'll talk about later on? Now it's just like, well, is it really this cut and dry sort of competition of the top eight that we were expecting from the start? I think it's on its head. No one is safe. No one is safe from the end of this competition at this point. As we stand right now from what we've seen, those bottom four, I think, have as good a chance as the second four, if that makes sense, of making the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, your Chiefs, Hurricanes, Blues, Crusaders, they're safe, right? They're going to be in there.
Are they?
Well.
Bold statement.
Or maybe I'm just dreaming of a Crusaders that don't exist anymore.
But you would have said that the Brumbies would have been top four.
Probably had Brumbies in top four. But okay.
Not now.
But that crowd of you have Highlanders, Rebels, Waratahs, Moana, and Drua, Force, any of them. And Reds, yes, sorry, that's true. Yeah, any of that mishmash could be in or out. But I still think your Chiefs, Hurricanes, Blues, they've all started well. They're gonna cruise into the playoffs. I can't see any of those three dropping down out of the eight. So there are some guarantees, but what there aren't is guarantees as to who won't make it, which has changed. Whereas we were like, okay, these three teams, one Pacifica, Force, and Rebels, yes, won't make it. And there's a bit of a discussion about who eight and nine are, who that last one is. But those three won't make it. Was our preseason thing, right? Now, as you say, now it's a matter of, I don't know, they could all make it. The Force, clearly having started off with two losses, it's tough on them. They're the one that's going to find it harder now because they are playing catch up as a losing team. Look, they've got the worst points difference so far, so maybe they're the one team that you can say isn't going to make it. Who are the ones we originally said, but all the rest definitely And the Force have shown signs, but it's all good and well showing signs. We've seen teams show signs before, but you won't actually get points on the board. And the fact that the Rebels and the Moana Pacifica have already means they've got not just points on the board, but a confidence boost. We can actually go out. We actually belong here. Whereas the Western Force are kind of like, well, I know I belong here because I'm an experienced player, Nick White, for example. And there's a whole bunch of guys like that who go, I belong here because I'm an experienced player. But do we belong here as a team? I'm not sure we do. And I think that lack of self-confidence will be a problem for if they don't get a win in the next couple of weeks, will cause them some real problems.
I think the positive for the Force, though, is that they are competing. Like, they were in that game against the Rebels. And sure, it was only the Rebels, right? But yep, they're scoring points, they're competing, and they're in the game, through the second half, right? So they're actually competitive. They're not getting pumped by 40 points plus, and they're actually in the game throughout the first 40 to 50 minutes, which I think is the biggest positive. The thing I think could change is we could see teams like the Brumbies, the Hurricanes, the Crusaders potentially not in that top four, but in that bottom four. Sure, I think they'll be pretty safe inside that eight.
Yeah.
But I just think your top four, I saw the Chiefs look phenomenal right now. Okay. They're looking head and shoulders above the rest. But that top four could slip to the bottom four. And then I think that bottom four and our not making the playoffs four, they're fluid. Those guys are all fluid. Bar the Force, which probably looked the weakest. But I like the fact they're competing. That's the main thing. They're not getting pumped. They're not giving up. And they are scoring a lot of points, like we've seen every team so far this weekend.
Now, we do need to touch on some cards at some point this weekend. As we're talking about this game, Stephen Harris says, Nigel R. Wong's red card was harsh compared to other instances I saw over the weekend. Right. So to me, the difference between Nigel R. Wong's card and the other ones is the other ones, they're standing upright and they're actually, there's some vague attempt at having some sort of tackle, but they've gone too high and either the head or shoulder has bumped the other guy's head. The Nigel R. Wong tackle, well, no, it's not a tackle. There is no arm to this at all. He has dropped the shoulder and gone full on shoulder charge. There is no way that any of those arms are anywhere near trying to even think about making a tackle. It's totally tucked. And he's just gone bang. And it's a shoulder charge. And so we know shoulder charges are illegal. And now, yes, he didn't make contact with the head. Now, we've kind of got this new, idea that head contact is red and that's everything. And that's it. Full stop. It's all about the head. But I'm trying to remember whether shoulder charges were red cards beforehand, just because of how dangerous they can be. But it was a blatant shoulder charge. This wasn't a tackle that he was doing. So I guess it comes down to, and it's just been so long since we've seen one of these that we've forgotten what the punishment is. Because I can see Steve there, obviously there typing away going, what is the punishment for a shoulder charge? I can't remember. Because no one does them. Everyone knows you shouldn't do this. This was a bit of a throwback to a Sonny Bill Williams kind of thing. And even he actually tried to at least pretend that he was trying to wrap one of the other arms. But we've not seen this in quite a few years now, this kind of tackle. So come on then, Conflict. Enlighten me as to what the laws.
I'm trying to find it. I've not found anything. But I do agree with you in the fact that it looked horrific. It looked absolutely shocking. That was the biggest part about it, because he was pucking up for it right from the start, wasn't he? way before the player even come near him. But this red card, though, that's the big thing for me, whether it was that bad enough to be a red card. But here we go. Law application. Here we go. Law application. So shoulder charge to the head or neck of the ball carrier and mitigation is not applied. Oh, man. Blah, 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 blah. Mitigation, blah, blah, blah.
Shoulder charge, head or neck, I agree, is red. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I agree with that, but I'm trying to get to the, to get to the good part. it takes a lot about head. Okay, so this is the whole graph and all this sort of garbage. So here we go. Yes, it's all about shoulder, though. It is all about shoulder or head. It really, really is. And that's the big difference they make about it. Shoulder charge, no arm tackle, Yeah, here you go. So shoulder, here you go. Shoulder charge to the body, no head or neck contact with high degree of danger is yellow. Shoulder charge to the head or neck of the ball carrier and mitigation is not applied, red card. So that should have been a yellow of my quick was thinking of that. If it hits the head red, hits the body yellow.
Okay, fine. Yep. Then he was harsh done by. Yep.
But shoulder charge to the body with low degree of danger is.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just a penalty. So you got to, so then here you go. You're going, was it high degree or no degree of danger? So you're looking penalty yellow. I think it looked bad. It looked really, really bad. So I'd say yellow.
Definitely yellow. I mean, there's no two ways about that one. It was definitely a card.
Well, high danger though. I mean, did he hurt the guy?
It was well, high danger, as in I'm coming in and boom. There was no
good tackle. Good tackle.
The guy's running forwards and he falls backwards after running forwards. There's been
good tackle.
No, it wasn't like a. It's not like one of these ones that shoulder charge you can call when you're sort of diving for the corner and you kind of shoulder charge and out where you kind of, but this was bang on bang. But either way, the card definitely, and as you've read the law there, it should be yellow rather than red from according to that. So there we go.
This is what I don't like about the law though. The fact that it says high degree of danger when there's no stipulation of what actually constitutes to high degree of danger. So it makes it an opinionated matter. So I say penalty, you say yellow card, right? Not that I'm saying either or, but it's the fact that if you're refereeing the match, you're going to give him a yellow. If I'm refereeing the match, I could say, well, okay, he just bumped them off and he put him on his ass. Okay, shouldn't use a shoulder, but hey, he didn't do the guy any damage. It wasn't high. You know what I'm saying, though? It's still
And that's what I dislike. Low degree of danger where you kind of a glancing blow that makes, but this was no glancing blow. This was I'm in your way. Boom. You're going backwards. Hell, it was a good hit. I agree. It's a good hit. It was an illegal good hit. That's all.
And the other thing I just recalled in seeing these this weekend's games too, with the one red card we'll talk about later, was that the 20-minute red card is still a thing. I completely forgot that even existed. I thought we'd moved on from that and kind of World Rugby thought it wasn't a great idea because we didn't use it at the World Cup, but apparently not.
No, but haven't you heard? We don't give a shit about World Rugby in Super Rugby. We have our own laws. We kind of use them as a starting place, and then we change them a bit. Like,
hey,
the kick tennis,
the kicking thing. I think that was a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
My rant's over now.
I wasn't sure whether it was 20 minutes or not until I saw the clock for Geordie's one going down.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay, it is 20 minutes. I thought it probably was, but yeah.
Oh, good times.
What have we got next then? Oh, next we've got the game of the round in some ways, because boy oh boy, nobody saw this one coming. Let's be blunt. After the Waratahs in round one got beaten by the Reds 40-22, not even close really. A couple of scores away. What happens in round two? Well, somehow they go behind to a try. From the Crusaders, one of their new boys there, Springer, scoring nicely in the corner. And then they do what all the commentators tell you shouldn't do, right? You don't beat the Crusaders with penalties. Well, the Waratahs just did, because Edmund then starts punishing them, punishing the Crusaders for conceding penalties. Now, what's funny here is the Waratahs knock over three penalties. The Crusaders knock over none in this game. The Waratahs go up 11 penalties. The Crusaders go up 9. So a third of those penalties were kicked over As the Waratahs said, if you're going to infringe, we're taking points. Well done. That's what you should do. Now, they did pick up a yellow card, which then soon afterwards led to a retry. But because they've been nicking up, because they've been knocking over penalties, when they got some, so you did send me something about showing that basically that the Crusaders don't have any tens anymore. They're all injured. they're all dead. That's a bit harsh. Sorry, they're all injured. They're not dead. We're not talking. This isn't war. They had themselves basically a debutant or a very inexperienced guy at 10, and then they had a guy who basically had decided that he wasn't going to start the season over everyone else. He's got a few more weeks off. Who was going to come in and suddenly start at 12, and he suddenly got the ball, and there was a big tall guy in front of him, so he kicked it. And David Havili got himself charged down. And I must say, I thought David Havili would have gone into 10, to be honest with you. Crusaders' attack is still clunky. Absolutely it is. Your 10 and 12 have never met each other before. They're like, oh, hello, who are you? You're that old guy. God, you're young. My God, I'm feeling old. Jeez, do they have rugby players this young nowadays? Those two have never met, hardly, before this game. They don't even know each other's name. They haven't been called. And so end up, yes, they're going to be clunky because those guys have hardly had any game time together at all. David Havili hasn't been there for pre-season when this guy's been doing all his drills as the third backup fly half, who gets like 10 minutes per training session to actually run the game. Otherwise, he's holding tackle bags. And so hence, this is what happens when you have a couple of injuries. So Sinclair suddenly gets himself a try from, and he's like, my God, what's this? I've actually got points in my name. This is brilliant. Edmund continues to knock over penalties, and suddenly they're 23-10 up, having scored as many tries as the Crusaders have. The Crusaders have scored two tries, so have the Waratahs, but they're leading 10-23 at halftime. There you go. You can win with threes. Not too much. Kamara was there last year. Crusaders have famed their prep, but maybe not this year. Look, yes, he was there last year. But look, these as far as actual game time between Kamara and Drummond and Havili, game time together is going to be hardly any. Sure, okay, they've run drills together, fine, but their songs, that's not the same as game time. So suddenly, yeah, you're up 23-10 because you can kick, the Springer's try, Reese's try, two tries out wide. They weren't easy kicks for him. So I'm not going to bash him about missing those. But the Waratahs took their chance or took the bounce of ball that went their way, i.e. that charge down, i.e. later on when Gordon gets the intercept and runs the length and scores. But again, it's another one of these games where they scored the same number of tries, just like the Highlanders versus the Blues, but the actual margin of victory is 13 points. It's a two-score win because the Waratahs kicked all their points and they took penalties. And that's what led them to win this one. Sure, two of their tries were a bit lucky. I'll say charge down and intercept. That wasn't them sort of building play. But hey, if chances come your way, take them and go for it. The Crusaders, if you're going to say about sort of created tries, won this game. But that's not rugby.
It doesn't put points on the competition table, though, does it? Getting created tries over chances tries. You know what? Added to that, too, it was the fact that the Waratahs, they didn't really let up. They had high intensity and they kept high pressure on and they kept that up throughout. I mean, it's typically what we've seen. I think especially from Australian sides, they get it by leading. If they were struggling to keep in front or they're chasing this game, they can lose out their intensity because they start to lose their confidence and so on, like the snowball effect, right? But this game, they just, like you said, with those penalties and getting the tries just at the right times when things weren't, you know, the scoreboard was starting to ease up, they'd hit again. And they just kept it rolling over. Like, see the timing of their tries. You know, they're not clustered all together. They're spread out nice and evenly throughout. So they just keep getting that confidence boost. They keep getting that hit of points, and it keeps them going to keep more pressure on the Crusaders. So it was a shock. It was a surprise. And you watch the scoreboard and you're just like, well, it's going to change sooner or later. Like, the Crusaders will catch up. And then it's like, time's running out.
This is one of those games where you look at the TAB and they've got the Crusaders at $3 or $4 and you go, yes, I'm in.
Yes.
Easy money.
Yeah, you expect that they're going to come back, right? You just think, it's like, yeah, this is typical Crusaders. They go for a little sleep. And I did find it surprising of a few of the selections, right? Because they didn't start Drummond. They started Hotham instead at scrum half. Little things like that. I thought Harvili definitely looked out of speed. I was not impressed by McLeod last week. Harvili didn't really look up to speed, as you've pressed on about already. So there's a number of things here that just, like you spoke, Nocturnal said they're clunky. They're just clunky. They're like putting puzzle pieces together that just aren't fitting right at the moment, right? And they're just bashing against each other. And then you flip it to the Waratahs that have those puzzle pieces that are firmly interlinked. You know, like the guys like Angus Bell and Johnston Holmes were incredible. You know, your Lee Warners, your Gambles, those guys in the back row. A second row that's kind of like extra back rowers too, with the way they work and they play that ruck game and they run strongly. So they've got tools that know how they're going to work. Typically, when they come against a better team, it falls apart a little bit. But hey, with the confidence they were getting in this, these guys were loving running because they were getting reward. They were getting forward momentum. They were getting on the front foot. Everything was clicking for them really, really nicely. And Australia have a plethora of number 10s, man. Oh, boy, don't we wish we were an Australian for number 10s. I tell you what, we sit here, and I was thinking about this after the weekend, and I was thinking, man, we're stacked for nines, man. We are absolutely rocking nines. We're probably, each franchise has at least one, if not two, nines who are absolutely killing it and should be looking at higher honours. Tens, I don't know where we're looking, right, bar one player. Australia's the opposite, right? You've got the Lolosios, you've got Edmonds, you've got Gordons. All these guys are just absolutely smoking it. The liner at the Reds is looking incredible as well. But nines, I mean, you've got a few old guys there that have been around the traps, but they don't look quite as flush. But tens, man, you know, Edmund really has stood up this year. I think he looks incredible. And the race for that Wallaby 10 jumper is going to be exciting because I don't know how you fit 3+ guys into that squad. And they look like they're going to be fun too. Like the players that they've got, like we'll see in the next game, outside backs are really storming on this season as well. The Waratahs played well, took their chances, kept the pressure up, played with confidence. And hey, the Crusaders are not the last 7-season Crusaders this season. We knew that. And we're finding it out, right? So it's going to be exciting to see how they respond and how they find these link-up players to gel together and take that next step, right, of the next few rounds. It's going to be key for them. They've got to get a win, right? They're down with the force, right? 0-2. So big pressure around 3 and 4 coming up for them.
Now, Stephen Harris, I wouldn't write the Crusaders off as they've got off to a slow start in the past, but I do wonder if the loss of Whitelock, Moanga, Jordan especially brings them back to the rest of the pack. Remember, there's no Cody Taylor. Look, this idea of them having slow starts is because, and bringing back my stats from last week, is because of what happened between under Todd Blackadder between 2009 and particularly 2011, really, and 2016, where they lost 5 out of their 6 opening games that year, including one to the Rebels back, which was the Rebels' first ever overseas win was to the Crusaders in Christchurch. That was also their first win over the Crusaders. Look at what under Razor and 6 on the bounce where they won their opening games. So I think we have to admit that it's a different coaching crowd, but also they have lost a hell of a lot of experience there with your Whitelocks, with your Mwangas. The fact that also the losing. You're bringing players like Halfpenny, who was supposed to cover for Jordan, injured before he even gets to play. You look at fly half. I think got 3 injured fly halves. So injuries really have hurt them this year in those key positions. that run the game. So look, it's there is some mitigating circumstances, and I think they will come. They will improve, but I don't think they're going to improve because of this Crusaders slow start thing. I think they're going to improve because players will get fit. They'll have a better squad. They'll get used to the coaching setup, and they do have quality players. You had a Jordan in there. You had a and I've gone blank. Who's their first choice? Bloody fly half is that's injured. You bring back you have Ratima? Sorry,
Ratima.
What 10?
No, I always get Ratima and the other guy mixed up. The Chiefs 9 and the Crusaders 10. Reihana, Rivers Reihana.
Rivers Reihana is like third choice, second or third. Fergus Burke, thank you.
Fergus Burke. No, yeah, rubbish. Like the rest of them.
Get Fergus Burke back, who actually can run the show, and look, the Crusaders are drew away next, and they've lost there before, even with all their best players. They will improve as they get players back from injury, I don't think this is an injury issue, not the Crusaders start slow issue, in my mind.
You know what else is going to be changing for the Crusaders? Johnny McNichol. There you go. There's your scoop for you. He's come back. He's gone from Scarlets. All pointing to the fact he's going to go back to the Crusaders. So not confirmed, but he's coming back to New Zealand, and I don't see anywhere else he's going to go, and that's where he's from. So I'd expect that Johnny McNichol will be lining up for the Crusaders soon, I would say. Very, very soon, which is going to not really help where I think their problem is. I think their problem is at 12. Possibly they're not getting the platform from their forwards, but I think that'll come right. But I just think their backline play, which they rely on so much for points, it's got a break. And I thought McLeod was just not there last week. And I think Havili was just not there this week. Sure, it was both their first games of the season. I think once they sort that out, they can use Aumua like they're supposed to use Aumua. Like, he had one really good run. He should be having about 8 of those runs in a game. He touched the ball more at least this round than he did last round. So progress there. But use the players properly. Aumua is not a decoy runner. Maybe, you know, one or two. But, hey, if they know he's coming, they still ain't stopping him. So it doesn't really matter. Just let him have the ball, right? So for me, yeah, sure, inexperienced 10s. The pressure's going to the 12. The 12's not handling it. And please, stop using Ryan Crotty. The last thing I want to see is Ryan Crotty trottling back, trying to chase down a Waratahs backline player when he knows he can't run faster than 2 miles an hour. So let's Ryan Crotty go. The coaching staff, find someone else, and just let him have a nice end to his career. He's not the man.
By the way, what do you think of the crowds in attendance? Super ground, abysmal. Shouldn't be in Hamilton. Shouldn't be in Melbourne. Total waste of time. Chasing the money is not the right thing. Chase the attendance. Money will come, and that's what we said at the beginning of the show. So yeah, bad idea in the first place. Having it in there.
Just about the coach. I see a lot of people calling for Penny's head already after 2 games. Don't even. Just know. He's got a season. He's got a season where they'll make the playoffs, right? They're going to make the playoffs. He's got the season. Hey, they might get knocked out, you know, quarterfinals, so be it. But he's not going to go mid-season. And you can't ruin a guy after 2 games.
No. Perhaps he's got the wrong forward trio. The loose trio, as Stephen Harris said, he'd like to have Christie, Grace, and Lo Willie. He'll be far more mobile, he says. Simon Hughes says, how many games will Ward Penny need to win to guarantee his job? He will have to, this comes down to, he has to win the quarterfinal and the semi-final. He has to make the final at the end of the day. All the other games don't really matter because he's going to make top 8. He's good, right? Okay. As long as he makes top 8, wins that and gets himself into a final, then he's okay. Semi-final? That's a bit dodgy. Depends in some ways as to who he loses to, right? If he loses to the team that wins it, if he loses to like the Chiefs in the semi-final, then maybe he's okay. If he goes out in the quarterfinals, goodbye. I mean, he's got to do better than that. But he's got to be at least semi-finals, probably final, to keep his job, in my opinion.
I mean, if he doesn't finish inside the top four, it's likely going to be a quarterfinal exit, right? And that, I mean, regardless of who comes, like, he comes up against the Chiefs, any of those top four teams, and loses. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be good enough, but I think if they don't get that, that's going to be bad news for them. So, really, I think the games do matter in the regular season because I think they've got to finish top four to be able to make that semi-final.
Chris, Super Round in Auckland? No, sorry. The Blues don't fill Eden Park. Eden Park would be horrible again. Look, I just don't think the Super Round is a good idea at the moment. It's about chasing money from places. It's not about actually trying to create something that the fans want to see at the end of the day. So moving on then to the final day, Chiefs versus the Brumbies. And this might be a bit of a wake-up call for some of us who are thinking, hey, the Brumbies can be challengers this year. And suddenly Chiefs put them away 46-12. Ouch. I think maybe looking again at the order of the tries, no, the scoreline wasn't harsh. The Chiefs showed the Brumbies respect by the first choice of chance they had to take points. They did so. They kicked three, right? So this is the Chiefs. So it's like, we're not pissing around going, let's see how many tries we can score. This is a matter of, we're going to get the win. We're going to put points on the board when you give us opportunity, and we're going to play proper rugby, play serious rugby. None of this, we're always kicking to the corner stuff. So I'm impressed by that from the Chiefs on that point of view. And look, you said earlier, this is the one team that's standing out above the rest. 31 missed tackles or 31 defenders beaten, 10 clean breaks. Boy, oh boy. The Chiefs are playing some lovely attacking rugby at the moment.
That was my point I was going to make about this game. Voluntary defense by the Brumbies was certainly probably my standout point, because it just, yeah, they didn't look like they were really in a position to ever stop the running threats that the Chiefs posed. And I thought the Chiefs did well enough to lure this game to how they wanted to play it as well, not get dragged into why I think the Brumbies are typically a team that likes to play with the forwards a lot more, right? So this is a game that got a lot more open. I guess it could be contributed to the fact of where they were playing and the conditions, seeing it was during the afternoon, typically in the sun, and it was exciting. Brumbies probably weren't too happy. They got dried out. But that last try that Artemis scored, I think, was a massive indication to the Brumbies' performance. A forward doing a pointless little punt downfield that hardly left the grass, deflected away, went straight to a Chiefs hand, and he just bumbled his way. That was Shelby Rickett. This, you know, bumbled through, sidestepped a couple of guys who really just didn't want to be there by that point, and running for another try. That really summed it up right at the end. And it's like, yep, it's just it's not your day. It's not your day. But someone whose season it is Corey Toole. Now that kid is phenomenal.
No, let's just rewind it. There's not your day, not your day. Kicking like that. I'm sorry, but that is there's suicide. There's something like the commentators that point out, oh, the Chiefs are really good at taking the opportunities. No, this is suicide rugby by the Brumbies. This is not the Chiefs taking opportunities. This is the Brumbies giving them the ball in the perfect counter-attacking opportunity. Arcoy had a look, and he had a good game and got himself in lovely in the highlights packages and stuff off the bench. But there is no way he should be given that ball on the halfway line with no defenders in front of him, with a massive gap to just run into. And that should not be happening. That should be in the other on the edge of the 22, and the other half with a chase line behind it. That's not the Chiefs taking playing good rugby. That's suicide rugby by the Brumbies. And there's a couple of situations like that this weekend where the commentators were trying to just big up the attack, where in reality was the people you're giving up the ball like that. I'm sorry, but that's just you're giving away five. You're giving away 7 points. That's not a good attack. That's just piss poor exiting or defense.
those commentary job though. That was their job, to make super round so much more super, right? That's what they're gonna do. No, but look, 73 minutes gone. You're down what, 39 points to 12. The game's done. I mean, that's what I mean. They were shut, they were clicked off, they were gone, they weren't there. They already decided that it was not that was not being a game that they were gonna win. And to the point that you've got a forward clearing your line like that near your 22, case in point, he shouldn't be, let alone in that position, let alone making that decision, let alone being allowed to do that. Someone's got to take that and be like, hey, you've just got to take a tackle. And, you know, they probably would have lost it anyway, regardless, because there was no one there whatsoever. So it just, that's what I mean. It summed up that performance of the Brumbies, just weren't really at the races at all, apart from a couple of players, sadly, which is quite concerning of a team we consider to be, you know, one of the, well, front runners, especially for Australia as well. But I do like, going back to Corey Tull, I think he's incredible. He is a freak show. And again, imagine him on the back of an incredible back line that is getting some great ball. Imagine him on the back of the Chiefs back line, right? Flip him on the other side. He would be scoring tries for fun. Kind of looking like Nanai Satoru is this season, who's looking very impressive. His best year in Super Rugby by far. And dare we say it, Joshuani, I know, like last weekend we laughed at it, but he did look kind of good off the bench. I don't like to say it, but he did look quite good.
Yeah, it was a quiet game for Rob Valentini. I did see him sort of wandering around at times, where you're thinking, why are you just wandering around the back of that mall? Just do something. You should be either going into the mall in a position to take a pass, to run off it, or ruck or whatever. And yeah, Valentini did seem to be at times looking a bit lost in that game. Which he shouldn't be, but the but even so, look, you can, yeah, I can see them being demoralized, but yeah, some of the things that the Brumbies were doing were just criminal. For you're being paid to be out there, you're being paid to do stuff, you've practiced all year long to do stuff, and you still do that? Come on, that's not acceptable for a professional player. And the Brumbies, actually, the one team that we thought might challenge from Australia, very disappointing in the opening two rounds. Very disappointing. Nowhere near where it should be.
Is it just me, or did they look absolutely gassed? They just didn't look like they were, not physically, but fitness-wise, in that game. They looked, yeah, just off pace. They didn't look, they were up to the pace of the game. They looked like they were exhausted. And like say, players were ambling around a bit, like they were just trying to catch their breath or you know, trying to take 5 minutes of not being intense. I do feel sorry for Valentini because, you know, in the opening round, I felt like he did a lot of work. And he was a real standout of a guy that did, you know, a lot of massive, massive work. But, you know, a week's rest, you'd think you'd be ready to go again and do it again and carry that that forward pack. But they just looked gassed. It just was weird. The fitness just didn't look up to it, whether it was a heat. I don't know. But certainly, I guess, when you're leading for the Chiefs, it's easier to get up for it, right? But when you're getting pumped, maybe, yeah, they're just not quite up to scratch like they used to be.
Yeah, and Laurie Fish not there. That's actually, he's a cracking coach. So maybe that is part of it.
Could be why.
Stephen Harris, Arsa Tutu and Jacobson, top contenders to the vacant All Blacks number 8 jersey. Any other contenders?
No, it's Nanisi.
No. No, it's Ardie Surveyor. Ardie's only on sabbatical and he's available when he comes back, right? He's not. He's available for the All Blacks. It's not a vacant jumper. Ardie will walk back into that number 8 jersey. Sorry, but...
No, Satutu, thanks.
The vacant jersey is 7 and 6. Who's taking those jerseys? Blackadder probably to 6 is where a lot of people are thinking. But that 7 jersey, Sam Kane's coming back and he's available. But I'm not so sure he walks straight into it in the same way that Arnie does into the 8 jersey when he comes back from their sabbatical. So to me, Papelihi is probably pushing very hard for that 7 jersey. But
that's concerning.
That's concerning. Well, who else?
Oh, it's too early. It's way too early. Okay. Two rounds. Too early. Billy Harmon. There we go. Since you're all being Aucklanders, have some belief. No one else. I mean, I was looking at, that's what I mean about the 10s and the 9s. I was looking before. I was like, man, 9s, you know, Rowe is playing outstanding. Artsma is playing outstanding. Roygaard is outstanding. That other South African guy at the Hurricanes looked really good in round one and off the bench as well. I've forgotten his name already. You know, there's so many players. Finney Christie looks like trash, which is amazing because they should all leapfrog him. You know, and then you've got
Xavier Rowe, who actually starts for the Chiefs, and Rathma only comes off the bench.
But he still looks better, right? I mean, that's what I mean. There's so many, but where's the 10s? Oh, yeah. Where's the 10s? And then, like, where's the standout back row? Not that great, right? Some positions we are flush, other positions not so much. So a bit of good, a bit of bad. We'll see how it goes. But can we still, has Lotu Onisi played for internationally anywhere yet? I'm going to find out because I want to get him into a New Zealand Super Rugby team very fast. Let's have a look. He's Tongan. Yes, he's not played international rugby. Lotu Onisi, Highlanders, get on him. Sign him. Bring him straight away. Quick. He's played for North Harbour. Get him in.
Oh, dear. Anyway, last game of the round. Hurricanes versus Reds. Boy, oh boy. What a way to finish off the round, right? Going to Golden Point, where they where finally the Hurricanes managed to pull it off. But Cam Roygaard, we're talking about nines putting their hands up, and he ran in for two tries in this one. It was two tries on this one. So yeah, so he has he's definitely putting his hand up there, dragging his team back in some ways, you could say, into this one. Because look, they were falling behind. I'm sure they scored first, but it was 12-19 until extra time they scored just after the hooter to get it to 19-19. Again, the Reds go ahead. Love pulls it back. The Reds go ahead. Roygaard pulls it back. The Highlanders always chasing this game after the initial win, get ahead. The Reds, again, one of those things you talk about. Australian teams have to get ahead. Otherwise, you can't see them chasing games, but you can see them sort of staying in it while they're equal or just ahead. And the Reds did that all the way on this one. Jordy Barrett's red card, totally agree with it. Look, he stayed far too upright and his shoulder hit the head. You have to duck down. Now, if you look at it, if you watch it, he does slow down his kick chase and gets ready, but doesn't drop. And because he doesn't drop, sure, if he drops, you say he's going to get stepped. He's not able to move. Yeah, he is. Absolutely. But if you stay high, you're going to get carded. We've already said you've got to get your head and shoulders out of the head area of the ball carrier. He didn't. His head was in the right area. It was in the area. His shoulder was. Now, the only reason it probably wasn't a head and heads clash is he got his head out of the way and hence brought the shoulder up, which ended up hitting the guy in the face. You've got to get down, and sure, that means you're going to get stepped. Good to see Geordie being level-headed about his card. He's maturing. I'll be honest, I've not seen the comments, but if he has been and just gone, yep, it was the right call, then good on him. Maybe shock horror. Maybe the players are catching on to the fact that they need to not smash each other in the head all the time. So yes. On that one, I don't want to see Geordie in red card. He is our best 12. As far as the All Blacks go, I want to see him playing well. I do love watching him play. So I don't want to see him red carded. But this isn't an anti-Geordie thing. It's just the situation he put himself in at the end of the day, in my mind, on that one. Liner, a guy we were sort of talking about pre-season, seems to be settling in quite nicely into that Reds role as well. At 10, taking his kicks, running the show, not trying to be too flashy, but just running things.
I told you, it's all the Aussies, man. Aussies got all the 10s. And he's got experience inside him. I think having Tate McDermott there for him is really helpful. It will certainly have helped him out. McDermott's the guy who can take a bit of pressure off you, not only with the way he runs, but also with his power game and how he gets around the paddock. So he's a good man to have. He's not got the inexperience. He's got a man that's going to help him out for sure. But yeah, you've still got to step up. We saw it in the opening game, didn't we? We spoke about it, how he actually stood up to his game and he did just what he had to do well. He didn't try to do too much. He just did his things. He's got Paisami outside him. He's got McDermott inside him. He's got guys who can cover for him. But that Jordy Barrett tackle, I mean, why did it have to be on Pattaya? It's just like if someone's going to stand on someone's leg, they're going to stand on Taliano Tupou's leg, aren't they? When it comes to Australians. If someone's going to high tackle someone, they're going to high tackle Pattaya. It's like they're just an injury magnet, those sort of players. They just have it. So I hope he's not actually injured. But when I saw it, I was just like, oh. It had to be Pattaya. It just had to be Pattaya, but unfortunate as it was. But the Reds, really good. I mean, I've been impressed by them. I had expectations that they'll be competitive. I really liked them in their opening game against the Waratahs. And I really like, we're seeing a lot from them from the television coverage in Australia of the way that they're coached and sort of the passion that is being instilled into this Red team. I think that really is making a huge difference for the side. If you like swearing and stuff like that, you should try and find them because there's a lot of it and there's a lot of passion and it's really next level kind of like, screw those guys. We're going to do this to them. We're going to do that to them. And it's not for the faint of ears, but man, talk about buying in of the Blues. I think the Reds are doing much of that same sort of thing and they are buying into this passion of the jersey, which is something we've not seen from Australian teams, really, for a long, long time. So it's really nice, really good to see from them. And, hey, two games, a win, golden point, whatever loss, they'll take that. That's really, really encouraging for them. And, I mean, look at their team. And, there's not too many players that are kind of being passengers aside from Vunivalu in this side. So it's really good to see and nice to see them stepping up. And just the Hurricanes, though, are just a question, are they contenders two rounds in? Do we really know? We don't really know. I don't think they've shown us enough to say, yes, okay, this team is going to be right there near the end. But they've got guys who are standing up. I'm really happy to see these young Hurricanes guys, which I've been, jumping on the bandwagon about for a couple of years now, the Ruben Loves, the Roy Guards, who's firmly, I mean, his bandwagon's long gone for me now. He's left me behind. I'm still there for Ruben Love, definitely for him. And it's good to see the former Southlander, Josh Morby, really playing well on the wing too. He's really strong. He's bulked up a lot in the last couple of years and he's becoming a real threat down that right side for the Hurricanes, despite not getting the tries. I think on the outsides with Naholo and Morby, they've got some powerful, pacey sort of guys. So looking good. Like, we kind of know we're going to get from the Hurricanes backline, right? We know they're going to get guys that are out there scoring tries, but they seem to be, and hopefully continue to, step up in that forward pack. And the Lackeyes and the Yossies, those guys especially, need to be the continuation of that next breed of forward pack for this Hurricanes team.
Yeah, look, and the fact that Raisi isn't getting into this team is amazing for those two those two young wingers there for that one. Look, I'm going to wrap things up because we've run well over with a quick talk chat about the table. We've got the Chiefs, Hurricanes and Blues at the top there, all with 9 points. So I think that one bonus point and two wins. Then we get a very crowded middle of the table. The Reds on 6 points, they got picked up two bonus points with their win. The Highlanders and Brumbies and Rebels all on 5. And the Waratahs and Moana Pacifica on 4. Then we get down to the teams that aren't going so well. The Crusaders. What? Oh, my God. 1 point from two games. The Andrua also with 1 point from two games. And the team and then the Western Force with 0. Two of those bottom three are meeting next week. The Crusaders and are travelling up to Fiji. So that'll be a cracker. In that one. Other games next week, Moana Pacifica. Can their good run continue with their game against the Rebels? The Tars take on the Highlanders. Boy, off the back of that, can we see the Tars beating two Kiwi teams in 2 weekends? The Brumbies host the Force. Boy, oh boy, both those teams could do with the win to get their seasons back on track. The Canes versus the Blues, as you say, are the Canes the real deal? Because that's where we'll find out. And then the Reds versus the Chiefs. Boy, oh boy, that's also a good one. But I think the Reds are going to find that one tough in that last one there. But it is, the Chiefs are away. So there we go, boys. Anyway, Thank you, Cornflake. We'll be back at 8 p.m. on Monday. See you all then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.